ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
We heard pop, 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 and it sounded like firecrackers going off. And then I saw people sprinting from the beach.
People ran past and said, there's a shooter, there's a mass shooting, and they're killing people. And I heard the gunshots.
I saw a lot of people on the floor, kids crying, with looking for their mom, and they couldn't find a lot of people crying.
Everyone was just running, and there were bullets, and there were so many of them, and we were really scared.
It's the worst mass shooting in Australia since the Port Arthur massacre, the worst act of terrorism in Australia's history. 16 are dead and many more injured at a place special in Australia's heart, Bondi Beach, at an event special to the Jewish community, Hanukkah.
This is a targeted attack on Jewish Australians on the first day of Hanukkah, which should be a day of joy, a celebration of faith. An act of evil anti-Semitism, terrorism, that has struck the heart of our nation.
Wherever it is, we need to fight anti-Semitism. It is toxic. It is cancerous within a community, and as you can see from last night, it leads to devastating, devastating implications for the people of our country.
Today, what does this event mean for a grieving nation? And did authorities fail to heed the warnings? In a moment, extremism expert Dr. Josh Ruse. But first, as shots rang out, Bondi local and Sydney cardiologist Dr. James Otten rushed to assist the wounded. I'm Andy Park on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily.
Yeah, so I was just outside the North Bondi Surf Club when the first shots happened. I initially thought that they were just firecrackers, but people started running and it was clear that there was something bad happening. I can say that I'm totally untrained for this, and I think that I don't think there'd be many people who would ever expect to experience something like that. After sirens occurred and the shooting had stopped is when I came out. And, you know, at that stage, I was still, you know, I was still somehow wasn't expecting that scene. I was still hoping it was firecrackers or something much more benign, and somehow my brain wasn't working properly, and I certainly didn't expect to see what had happened. There were multiple people who were injured. There were some people who were clearly, you know, severely affected. I attended to one person who had been shot and had a chest wound. But there were old people, young people, there was a couple of kids, and I think there were, you know, people who were even more seriously injured away from the scene where I was. The paramedics and the ambulance officers who were there were, as always, amazing. It was extremely difficult for them. They had to coordinate multiple casualties. There were lots of bystanders. There were, you know, some doctors, the surf lifesavers, a lot of people trying to help. It was chaotic. Everyone was trying their best. But this is a terrible thing. Bondi is a place that all Australians can go and enjoy themselves, and there is collegiality and a friendly place. And for this to happen in Australia at what I understand is like a family event is truly a tragedy.
Dr. Josh Ruse is a political sociologist focusing on extremism. Josh, it was about 6:45 on a warm, balmy Sunday summer night when gunshots echoed across the world-famous Bondi Beach. It's just terribly shocking, really, isn't it? I mean, how do you begin to understand what happened last night?
Horrific. Horrific scenes that are unprecedented in Australian history. It's the worst terror attack in Australian history, unfortunately. And really, whilst not unexpected, particularly if you were to speak to Jewish members of the population who've been anticipating this sort of attack for, you know, for many years, It was a very quiet, Sunday evening. No one saw this coming.
Let's look at what we know. We saw two men, who we now understand to be a father and son, open fire at an event for the Jewish community. The day was marking the first day of Hanukkah. This is an obviously very important day for the Jewish faith, isn't it?
Yeah, correct. It's a time of community, of peaceful gathering. And if anything, making it worse is that people's guards are down. They're surrounded by loved ones. On a beach, they're not thinking about any potential threat.
We saw crowds fleeing. Details are still really coming to light, but we know that authorities in New South Wales say 16 people, including a 10-year-old girl, are among the dead. I mean, for that sort of act to happen on such an auspicious occasion for the Jewish community at the very heart of Australian culture, Bondi Beach, sun, sand, and lifeguards, this is an unthinkable tragedy.
It's truly heartbreaking. Really, there are no words to adequately describe the grief and the loss of this. But this is a deeply symbolic attack. They've deliberately chosen Bondi Beach, one of the most iconic, well-known international landmarks Australia has. And it's a place, obviously, of higher Jewish concentration, population concentration. And so by targeting Australian Jews, effectively celebrating their faith on the beach at Bondi, they're not only making a statement, but they're making an international statement that they knew would be spread around the world rapidly.
And yet, in this darkness, there were cracks of light. There was an extraordinary act of bravery during the attack. We've all seen the amazing vision of that 43-year-old fruit shop owner from Sutherland who tackled the gunman, wrestling the long arm away from one of the shooters and forcing him to scamper. And this was all happening whilst another gunman continued firing. I mean, the bravery of that gentleman and also the New South Wales police in response, how do you sum that up?
It's the best of Australia facing the absolute worst. The visual images will obviously stay with Australia forever. There are many, many questions that will emerge from this, everything from the immediate response and to how they were able to continue to fire for so long from those positions, right through to the firearms, the extent to which this group is known, the deeper embedded issues around anti-Semitism in Australian society and the government's handling. But in the face of evil, we saw, a very short but momentary ray of light. And I think we've got to draw some inspiration and hope from that.
It very quickly became clear that this was an act of terrorism. And in fact, the acts of this father and son will be investigated as such. How significant is that in terms of police authorities and powers to meet the investigative burden and also the ability for police to seek the answers to the history of these two men, where they came from, what they believed in, who they associated with?
The immediate designation is unusual.
As a result of the circumstances of the incident tonight, at 9:36 p.m. this evening, I declared this to be a terrorist incident. I have also authorised special powers under Section 5 and Section 6 to ensure that...
We often see it require inquests to determine whether or not a terrorist attack has occurred, let alone an immediate designation. So I think those powers are going to be incredibly important in not only what material they can access quickly and how they deal with, for example, social media companies, but also looking as to whether or not there's a deeper level of support for this, whether or not there's a deeper ecosystem into which these individuals were associated, who they were working with, if anyone, and so that will enable them to unpack that much more quickly.
What do you mean by social media companies?
Yeah, so there's a number of layers to this. On the one hand, social media histories and whether or not these individuals were not only engaged with other individuals but sharing those messages in online chats and encrypted messaging apps and so on. And certainly police will be going through their devices and seeking to unpack that. They'll need these powers to do so. However, we're also talking about the issue of the sharing of this material and this footage, because we know that such footage has already been celebrated in some circles and has been shared online on apps like Telegram and celebrated by extremists overseas. And there's a stochastic element to this where footage of such attacks can also inspire others to act. The key case in point for this is the Brent and Tarrant Christchurch massacre, where there's been many copycat attempts, and part of that was the way he live streamed it. But nonetheless, in this case, we need to ensure that where possible, more graphic footage is taken down out of respect to the families, but also to prevent copycat attacks.
Let's look at the impact on the Australian community, in particular the Jewish community. I mean, if you live in any of the cities around Australia where there are high numbers of Jewish Australians, you see how cohesive and how well knitted together their own community is and how well guarded their community is to potential threats. I mean, you see security guards on the streets or on the weekends around Jewish schools and Jewish places of worship. The Prime Minister describes this act as an act of pure evil. Does this challenge our society in a way that hasn't been challenged before? But we've seen caravan plots, we've seen acts of arson. But in terms of the Jewish community in Australia, this would have to be the darkest moment.
Look, it's extremely unfortunate reality is that the Jewish population of Australia for many years have had to live in effectively a form of security state. They've had to have guards at their schools. They've had to have guards at synagogues and they've got their own community security group. And the reason they've had that is precisely for this reason. I mean, there's always a temptation, particularly for people who don't understand the challenge, to say, oh, that's overkill. Why do they need that? This is precisely the reason. It's because anti-Semitism, when it becomes militarized and when it's deeply embedded in some communities, you know, we see the end result of this last night. It's horrific.
I mean, this is just gutting for the Jewish community. The co-chief executive of the Executive Council of Australian Jewry, Alex Rivchin, has been reflecting on the impact to his community.
It's fundamentally changed this country. We've been changing incrementally, but something like this, there's no coming back from it. And the loss that we've suffered, the humans that are gone, that are no longer with us, they're irreplaceable, and something has been lost in a greater sense that can't be replaced, I think.
Does this event expose a vulnerability in Australia, particularly in our state and federal responses to anti-Semitism? I mean, Gillian Siegel, Australia's special envoy to combat anti-Semitism, recommended back in July that more security resources were needed to combat anti-Semitism. To what extent do you think that these warnings have not been heeded, particularly by the federal government?
I think there's been a failure by the federal government to take these recommendations seriously. I think the federal government has failed Australia's Jewish communities to the extent that it has consistently sought to equate anti-Semitism with other forms of racism. Now, absolutely, you know, or any form of racism is abhorrent and needs to be treated seriously. But the threat facing Australian Jewish populations has been elevated since October 7 to an unprecedented degree.
Do you agree then with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who referenced his August letter to Anthony Albanese in which he accused Canberra of pouring fuel on an anti-Semitic fire, end quote?
Yeah, I don't use those same evocative terms. I think you've got to look at this through the lens of, through an evidence-based lens. And I think in doing so, you can see a number of occasions where Australian Jewish leaders have raised time and time again the urgency of the threat and the dimensions and nature of the threat that they're facing. And time again, including our Home Affairs Minister, who's failed to act, have really fobbed this off. They've effectively said, look, we take it seriously. Anti-Semitism is bad, but so is all racism. And we're going to fund everyone equally. And we're going to look at this as a wider problem. It's not. Anti-Semitism is unique because of the deep hatreds that exist and have historically existed. We've seen how that's played out historically. And the fact is that Australia's Jewish population have been squeezed between neo-Nazis on the one hand, who call for their eradication, through to Salafi jihadists who, as we've seen at October 7, have attempted to annihilate the Jewish population, through to extreme leftists who cloak their anti-Semitism through the lens of anti-Zionism, and are quite clever in doing so, but nonetheless effectively carrying out the same anti-Semitic attacks as other members of these extreme groups. And this has effectively caused Australia's Jewish populations to feel deeply insecure, with many talking about leaving the country.
Another dimension to this that Australians are grappling with this morning is firearms control. The 50-year-old deceased shooter was a licensed firearms holder. He had six firearms legally in his possession. Do you expect this attack could prompt change to our firearms laws in the same way that we saw in the wake of Port Arthur in 1996, the huge Howard-era government buyback of guns, is it time for a new conversation about firearms control in Australia?
Yeah, my immediate response on seeing these weapons and their use was that they were single action, meaning that the gun laws, in a perverse way, have actually worked. They've actually prevented a much higher casualty count because they weren't semi-automatic weapons, which is quite frankly a godsend because the toll would have been immensely higher. However, the fact that this individual, potentially through hunting, may have been able to accumulate six weapons and have those on standby and be able to, you know, use those to increase the firepower of the attack is obviously of deep concern. And so the question would be about how many you can accumulate. You know, there are many, you know, responsible gun owners in Australia who use them for hunting and other, you know, reasonable purposes. But the fact is that being able to accumulate six weapons and to be able to use them effectively in a cyclical manner is a concern and needs to be addressed.
The ASIO boss, Mike Burgess, says the terrorism threat level remains at probable, which means that there's a 50-50 chance of another terrorism-related event in the next 12 months.
The national terrorism threat level remains at probable. I don't see that changing at this stage. Probable means there is a 50% chance of an act of terror, and unfortunately we've seen that horrific act occur tonight in Australia. Thank you.
Do you assess the level of threat of violence in the community the same way? Is the threat level increasing? Is that appropriate that it remains on probable?
I would say in the immediate aftermath of any attack, there's an elevated risk because we've seen this play out internationally where one attack leads to another. There's a stochastic effect where others draw inspiration from attacks. But we also need to consider that this is just the beginning of Hanukkah, you know, which is a period of time that's particularly important for the Jewish community. You know, we don't know if this is, you know, they say that there's no connection, but we don't know if there's others out there who might seem to seek to build on this. And we need to take that elevated threat more seriously. So I would, it's ultimately for the professionals and the experts in that space, but I would say based on what I'm seeing internationally, you know, we should at the very least consider whether or not that needs to be raised.
Josh, do you think that Australia will ever be the same again?
I think Australia has a deep reckoning to undertake out of this. This is the deadliest terror attack in Australia, and I think the reckoning will be the fact that this is a Jewish population. This wasn't targeted against sort of, you know, mainstream wider Australia or white Australia. This was targeted against the minority. We saw at Christchurch that there was a deeper reckoning failed to occur with the fact that this was a white Australian male carrying out attack on a mosque. We really never had that national conversation in the aftermath about, you know, the embedded violence in that and that he came from Australia. And to this extent, there's a strong possibility that we overlook the fact this was an issue around hatred of the Australian Jewish population. And we say, oh, it was tragic, it's terrible, we'll make sure it never happens again. But we don't have a deeper conversation about where this has come from and about the fact that we need to look at banning extremist organisations like Hizbut Tahrir and others that effectively contribute to an ecosystem in which extremism and hate is not only celebrated but normalised. And I think we need a deeper reckoning with what we're prepared to tolerate in that space.
This episode was produced by Sydney Peed and Cinnamon Nippard. Audio production by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Andy Park. ABC News Daily will be back again tomorrow. Thanks for listening.